Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 85. I am Alex. Here this week we have two, that's right, two people, not new two people, unfortunately. It's the same people you always hear. Ben, what's up, Ben?
I like that you said unfortunately.
Yeah. How's that for an intro? And obviously, I think you might have heard a yeah from Colin over in Sweden. How you doing, Colin?
I'm feeling kind of unappreciated.
Colin, I feel like we need to secede from this podcast. Leave Alex just to monologue.
You will do no such thing, my friends, because you're going to want to stick around next year, because I don't know if you guys heard, but during the All-Star game, guess what was mentioned? San Jose is getting next year's All-Star game. That's right.
Yay.
If you are a Sharks 365 person, as the Sharks really want to make sure you are, you'll get first choice. My choice personally would probably be to go to the skills competition, because I'm assuming those are going to be two separate tickets. But this is good news. The last time we had this was 1997. That, in my mind, not because I'm a Sharks fan, just in general, was one of the most memorable All-Star games. You had Owen Nolan calling his shot on Hasek, which was awesome. It was just an awesome, awesome All-Star game. And now we're going to have it back. That might be a lot of fun. I don't know. I've never been to an All-Star game. I missed the last one. But we have other All-Star stuff going on, right? Who did we send to the All-Star game this year, Ben?
Logan Couture. He totally... Sorry. They sent Brent Burns because he's entertaining in all the ways that entertaining means.
Yeah. Kind of a weird choice. I think we talked about this a little bit going into last week, just because, you know, don't really feel like he's an All-Star this year, but I guess that's just repayment for last year?
Well, does Drug? It depends on what you mean by what is an All-Star, right? I mean,
right.
We should.
John Scott.
I guess as a league, you know, there's no problem with leaning into who the most entertaining personalities are if you're not going to necessarily pick the most deserving from a level of play perspective.
Right.
Because I think, you know, we all agree that Logan Couture is probably having the best year level of play wise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure Burns is in the top four.
No.
Yeah.
I mean he is piling up points.
He is top four in suits worn. I will say that.
He's number one. His suits are number one in my heart.
That's the thing. It's like, as we're saying, it's not really about being the best players anymore. It's sort of being providing the best spectacle. And
yeah,
I blame Ovechkin for this. Was it the giant sunglasses first or the cowboy hat?
I mean, here's the thing, right? No matter what happens, if Brent Burns is on the ice, a puck is going in a net.
Or
and isn't that what or if Logan Couture happens to be on the ice with Brent Burns, that puck is going in his mouth.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot that
the
part.
The puck is filling a cavity.
Yeah, if you're Logan Couture's dentist, you are the happiest man alive right now. You can retire just on Logan Couture at this point, I feel like. Did you guys find this All-Star game interesting or fun in any facet? Because this is probably one of the first years where I watched a little bit of the end of the skills competition. It really felt like players were trying not to go up against Connor McDavid in skating. It just felt like, I don't know. I mean, it was pretty clear that the players would much rather be at the Winter Olympics than the All-Star game this year.
Yeah.
As Vlasic has made quite clear several times. But I don't know. Maybe it was the really, really, really hideous sweaters they were wearing, or maybe I'm just getting too old for the All-Star game. I can't really tell. I used to love the skills competition, and I still like the format that they're going with. But
Colin, did you watch any of it, or shall I jump in?
I give it a pass.
I really like the format. As we all discovered the year of John Scott, the 3-on-3 is a great call because the goalies aren't going to play hard one way or the other. So might as well.
It's not even the goalie. It's the what's the defense going to do in a non-checking situation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and then again, that's maybe another argument as to why a Brent Burns goes, because short of, you know, going into the starfish defensive posture, he doesn't really defend. yeah, exactly. So, you know, having three forwards on the ice is an advantage to the Pacific. They won. You know, I tuned in for basically the last round to watch the Pacific win. And only because it's the Pacific in top game. If they hadn't been there, I don't even know if I would have done that. And it's, you know, it's, I don't like All-Star games. I think I've said this before. All-Star games are dumb. There's no stakes.
Yep.
I mean,
I don't like them in the middle of the season. I don't like them, period.
I don't like the Pro Bowl. The Pro Bowl is stupid too, and it's at the end of the season.
Well, the Pro Bowl is extremely stupid because that's such a heavy contact league that you can't possibly you can't possibly play that in a way that would be entertaining. Like you've literally eliminated a massive, like one of the biggest draws, whether the league wants it to be or not.
And credit to the NHL. I mean, they've done everything they can to try to make this game watchable, I think. I mean, maybe there's more stuff they could do. Maybe they could set players on fire randomly. They could put a sniper in the stand and shoot Sidney Crosby. I don't know.
Or just make it the outdoor game so we don't have 50 outdoor games.
Maybe that would be a better celebration.
Why? Then, it's a spectacle, you know what I mean? And if you do it one a year, then it's special. And there you go.
Well, you're talking about keeping it as an all-star format, or are you saying just move the Winter Classic?
Quite frankly, you could just combine the two and call it a day.
Wait a minute. Was there a Winter Classic this year?
Yeah. Yes, there was.
See, that's how irrelevant that crap is to me, too.
The Rangers are. Well, yes. Yeah. You didn't know because, you know, it's always the same teams, it feels like, these days.
Always Chicago. Chicago shows up accidentally whether they're playing in it or not. Because
they just assumed they would be in it. You know, why not?
I can't imagine actually going to the Winter Classic and sitting in a football arena to watch hockey. Totally.
Well, I mean, I'll tell you what. I went to the stadium series, which is, come on, it's the same freaking thing, except they don't have pretend heritage jerseys. It was, you know, as far as like, I mean, first of all, that was at Levi's, right? Levi's, in my mind, is a horrible place to see a sporting event, period. I'm sorry for all of you 49er fans. It's just not a good stadium. It's new and it's big, but the acoustics there are awful. So, you know, it kind of sucked a lot of the atmosphere out, at least for what a normal Sharks game would be. But I'll say, like, I went and I had a good time just for the spectacle. And that's the thing, right? If the All-Star game is meant to market the league and basically be a spectacle, then that's probably a really good use of it.
Alex, you're like a have a fun time person. Ben and I are both cranky assholes, so. Like, well, you'd go and grump the whole time.
Well, no, but hold on a second. Hold on a second, because I know, Colin, you're still a relatively new parent, but Ben, let's talk, real talk for a second here, right? if your daughter were younger and they had back at Levi's, had a 2-day outdoor all-star game, 1-day skills competition outdoor in the nice sun. The next day, you know, this same All-Star game format, would you not consider buying a ticket to that? Of course you would.
I'd consider it. I mean, my daughter was my hockey buddy till she went off to college. So, I think I could probably get her to
here comes the waterworks.
Yep.
You know, no, I'm just saying, like, I actually think maybe, you know, the All-Star game, if it weren't, you know, if it happened to be overlapping with her break, with the game here, I might try to do that too, if I can, without, you know, falling into the Sharks 365 cult.
Now, obviously, there's a difference between going and seeing something live and watching it on TV too. Of course, like,
that's,
we're not being ignorant about that.
Yeah, well, I wanted to say that too. Like, I don't care about the NHL All-Star Game this year because there's no narrative, and it's just Burns from our side, and it's not here. But if there were a narrative, or it were here, then I'd absolutely be all over that. I think it's great for the local hockey community that ends up with, which is why, of course, you know, people were pushing so hard for us to get one again. Because it's nothing but upside in trying to build the fan base here.
Yeah,
that's true.
So,
I definitely feel like if you moved it to the end and you concentrated a lot of the gimmicky things that the NHL wants to throw around into it, then it would be not necessarily like the most worthwhile thing, but definitely more worthwhile and maybe more interesting. But guess what, guys?
I mean, you know, people skip the All-Star game already. You want to see an All-Star game that has no All-Stars, put it at the end of the season when guys want to go play golf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's the problem. Nobody would want to do it.
End of the season is also when everyone goes into surgery.
But I don't know.
Yeah, it's heal up.
Yeah, if they're rested a bit more, and quite frankly, the NHL needs to get back. All the sports leagues need to get back to having it feel or become an honor to participate. Which is, I think, when you pop in the middle of the season, it's not, because players are so concerned about their health in that scenario, right, and rest in that scenario, that it's right, never going to be any better than it is in the current situation. Whereas if you move it to a area where there is a little more breathing room there, it might, emphasis on might, elevate it a little bit. But, you know, if the players aren't going to take it seriously, obviously the fans aren't going to take it seriously. And then it becomes just a pointless, mostly pointless, semi-failed marketing exercise, I would say, for the league at this point.
Yeah. What I would want to see is, I'd like to see them try to use what the spectacle they need to manufacture to keep us sort of familiar with the generations as they're shifting in and out of the league. Like, you have all the players 30 plus vote for the players they want to see on a team representing the old men. And, you know, have the fans vote for all the players under 25 they want for the new generation, and have those people play.
Well, I think the big thing is that you kind of gotta, Ben, you mentioned this earlier, right? The All-Star game is not necessarily the league's All-Stars. And I think that's a huge part of the problem. Like, I understand that the need to market star players. Here's the deal. Any given season, you should have enough star recognizable players making that All-Star game anyway, that's to the point where that shouldn't really be an issue. But by not showing off the top talent that season, and in a lot of cases, to your point, Colin, it can be the up-and-coming talent, you're basically doing the game kind of a disservice, and it becomes a little bit pointless. That would be a smarter marketing exercise, because then we would learn about the players who maybe we ought to be watching, as opposed to just Sidney Crosby all the time.
Exactly.
No offense to Sidney Crosby, because he'd probably be there too. That's the thing, right? Like, you're not really, like, who wouldn't have been there this year, right? Burns? All right, but guess what? Then maybe PK Subban gets more spotlight, which is probably deserved, or definitely deserved. So it's, you know, it's shouldn't be looked at as a problem, I think.
I think, as Ben says, the narrative is really important. And so if it has the purpose of familiarizing people with the old and new players, you know, you've got Team Yager for the old guys, and, you know, Team whatever, Team New Guy.
That's funny, because that's where my mind went to, is they should have had the Yager farewell tour be the narrative.
Well, they're talking about doing that next year with San Jose. That was a little bit of a rumbling this morning. But I totally agree. I mean, look, I've never seen a league so afraid of marketing its players. But what are you gonna do, guys? This All-Star game provided sort of a rest, sort of. But that didn't mean it was going to be easy for the Sharks, because, of course, as you know, Jumbo out. And, of course, as you know, our schedulers love to give us back-to-backs every week. So the Sharks started a back-to-back series against the Penguins. Did not win this game. Brent Burns scored a goal in the second. Logan Couture helped take the lead in the second. At that point, it was 2-1. And then things just kind of flew off the handle a little bit. Now, one thing I do want to point out is that the Sharks played a pretty damn good second period. What really, 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 really hurt this game was kind of what transpired just before the end of that period. Also, Martin Jones, not the sharpest game. Not the sharpest game. Yeah, extremely lazy play. Not only a lazy play, but a play that was so incredibly ill-advised, Ben. Could you describe it for us?
We're talking about Burns just kind of lazily flipping a puck behind him, and then
did you black out for that portion?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, Burns had three plays in this game that essentially led to, if not two of them, definitely to Pens goals, and one of them to what should have been a Pens goal. And my rage, was supreme. Because here's the thing. The Sharks played a great jumbo-less game here.
Yeah.
Off the scoreboard.
Right.
If they were leading. They were leading both in possession and on the scoreboard, and then just fumbled this game away, mostly through Burns' laziness, if not his laziness, then Jones's laziness.
Not even laziness from Burns. What really concerned me about this game, and it's not the first time we've seen it, obviously, but this game in general really, really put on a low hockey IQ display from Brent Burns, which is extremely concerning given the position that he's supposed to be playing. The play that we were talking about was at the very end of the second period. The Sharks had taken the lead. All Burns had to do, Burns goes in the corner, all he has to do is basically, you know, a Vlasic or a smarter player just
rim it.
The puck there. Instead, he decides to do more or less a no-look pass to a player who isn't there, which is Goodrow, who by all logical, you know, there was no reason for him to be where Burns assumed he was going to be. And that led to the goal that tied the game. And from there, all the momentum built up from that excellent second period of the Sharks was basically Burns away. Look at that. That was terrible. I know, really bad. But that's the thing, is that like we're starting to see this as a constant theme with Burns, which is just, he's got to start prioritizing playing defense over everything else. He, you know, like, it's great that he's got an amazing shot. The Sharks obviously need offensive generation, or, you know, would prefer to have offensive generation from him, but at the same time, not at the cost of playing defense. And if he isn't aware of how to play the position properly, if he doesn't have a high enough IQ to do clock management or whatever, the Sharks really got to figure out what they're doing with him. Because this is a prime example of it being problematic.
It starts from actually holding him accountable publicly and in the games. And that's something DeBoer has refused to do. DeBoer looks at him as a net positive when he's probably at best, despite the points he puts up, a net wash, right? He gives up enough stupid... He gives up by pinching at the wrong time, by moving out of position to go at a guy that's already covered, by lazily flipping a puck to the opponent. He gives up more scoring chances, or as many scoring chances probably as he generates.
Right.
Well,
that's okay if your coaching staff recognizes it and tries to push him to at least be something of a net positive. And DeBoer does not do that. As far as anybody can tell, Burns has never sat down on the bench for extra time. When DeBoer talks publicly, he talks about, nope, I'm not worried about Burns. He's great. He's fantastic. And then also every now and then they will think that the solution is to put another defensive liability with him, which is pair him with Dylan.
Yeah.
Right. Mid game. They'll be like, oh, it's Ryan's fault. No, it's not Ryan's fault. It's Burns's fault.
Yeah.
Well, but the whole team, like right around late November, December, the whole team sort of tried to pivot to focus on the offense. And up till that point, Burns seemed to at least be prioritizing his defensive play. But when the team does this pivot, all of a sudden it seems like coaching is just saying, just go. Put shots on that, you know, put shots on skates, just put shots on. And, you know, defense will sort itself. It's like, no, Burns plays best when he's playing from, you know, the red line forward, not from the opposing blue line. And so, I mean, I'm with you guys on blaming coaching, because it just seems like a team-wide shift to prioritize, you know, breakout and offensive pressure when we were doing well being defensive. We just had one thing to sort of put together.
Well,
it's bad. No, go.
I was going to say, I think the frustrating thing for me is that this was a pretty big game for a lot of reasons. The standings are razor thin, basically, behind the Sharks' position. This was obviously a team that the Sharks really needed to beat. It was a team that they could have made at least, you know, a mini statement with, having Thornton be out and based off of the last game that these two teams played. And instead, what we got was some deflation, which
they were making that
was
statement.
Pointless.
They were making that they were making that statement that they could hold their own with the Penguins,
right?
Possession wise,
right? But you got to complete that,
which is amazing. Then every mistake they made ended up in the back of their net, and they made too many mistakes. Now you know, Colin said you know that this has been sort of a shift towards focusing on offense since January. I think the Sharks are like top three in the league generating goals since basically the start of the year. I'm not convinced personally that it has been a shift in how the team is deployed or what they're doing, as much as some bounces have gone their way. I'm not really 100% sure, because I think they're still doing a pretty good job of suppressing shots, which is DeBoer's system, right? But they are definitely making more mistakes. And I do think that some of that is Burns not being as focused on the defensive side, you know, to Colin's point, in recent times, probably because, you know, when we got to basically the turn of the year, he looked like a guy who was having a terrible offensive year. And now right. he's probably back to where he should be, whether that's bounces or a change in his play. In other words, I guess in summary, I don't know that everybody else has changed the way they're playing, but I do agree with you that I think Burns has been less focused on the defensive side to yeah. thus generate some of those points.
Yeah. Overcompensating.
Yeah. Well, and that was the big worry too. The word overcompensating with Jumbo out right. is that players would, this is something I think you said last week, Alex, that players yeah. would feel like they have to do something more.
Yeah.
Which is the worst thing you can do.
Absolutely.
In sports is try to do too much and get away from the system, get away from a simple game. But I don't think most of the team has succumbed to that. But we always have to worry about a guy like Burns succumbing to that.
What did you think about Jones' play this game? Because that's another one of the big questions that has been floating around, obviously, these last couple of weeks. Is it Jones? Should it be Dell? How is Jones' health? What's going on? Because I didn't feel like he had a particularly sharp game, at least not in the third.
Well, this was his first game back from injury, too, right?
Right. Right.
I mean, I would give it a big old wet fart noise myself. Colin, what did you think? I mean, this is a game he basically put a puck right on a...
Yeah. I mean,
right?
In this game specifically, just ugly. Just, yeah, I'll go with Ben's fart noise. It's it's kind of like... And it's a back-to-back. Like, why not put Dell, who's been awesome, against the scary team and let Jones take the next one?
Well, and that's actually especially relevant given where the Red Wings are standing wise and the quality of their play this series. But that's also a good transition, which, by the way, also includes Jones here, because Jones had a much better game this game. He had 42 saves,
but he shouldn't have been playing in this game.
Correct. Either. Correct. But he did well considering he was playing in it. So I'm going to give him that credit back. Yeah. The Sharks don't win this one. They lose it 2-1. This game, let me tell you, this shootout was pretty amazing. Jones had some stellar saves. Tatar had an amazing, amazing stick handling move, as did, was it Tierney? I can't even remember who was on the Sharks' side. But Tierney basically... Tierney scored this.
Yeah, Tierney was he did yeah. score. He was just before Abdelkader scored.
It was a shot, right? That was a great
snap.
One.
Snap. Yeah.
Yeah. Great shot. LeBanc scores in regulation. Basically, there's only two goals in the third period, and then this goes into a multi-round shootout at the end of the game with goals from Pavelski, Couture, and Tierney, and pretty good efforts from Donskoy and Hurdle as well. As mentioned. Martin Jones walks away with a .902 save percentage. He saved 46 attempts. He made 46 saves if you count the shootout stuff. I always get confused with how all that factors into it. Obviously, second game of a back-to-back. Not playing the greatest team at the moment. But, you know, the performance wasn't terrible. It certainly wasn't as strong as it was against the better Penguins. But in the end, I felt the Sharks got a point here. I felt like the Sharks were like, that, you know,
by the way, that's not actually his save percentage from the game.
Oh, what is
they're,
it?
They're counting for whatever reason.
Yeah.
The right. shootout, which is stupid. He saved 45 of 46 shots. So he had an outstanding game, way better than a 902 save.
Don't
percentage.
Listen to my stats. I'm bad with
hockey stats. What the hell are you doing with
yes,
this?
Confusing the hell out of me with my recap. What I was saying though was I felt like the Sharks could have walked away with this one. They were really close, particularly yep. in that shootout period. Do you guys have any thoughts? This was kind of a, you know, no offense, but kind of a boring game to me.
Yeah. I was playing X-Wing that night. I never watched the game, so.
full disclosure, Ben. Full disclosure. Yep.
I'm being honest. I mean, I skip a game once in a while.
Well, nobody's – If anyone on the Detroit side had actually gone to watch this game, I think, you know, no one would have disagreed with you.
There were a lot of red seats there in that game.
Oh, my God, yes. I mean, so,
the brand yeah, new and
it makes me sad because I used to really look forward to Red Wing Sharks games, but they just, you know,
yeah.
Well, I mean, one, they're not in our conference anymore, and two,
they're not good anymore.
Yeah. So that'll do it, Colin. I feel like the shootout, okay. Man. If for anyone who didn't watch the game and wants to go back and see any of it, I say you pretty much just skip over to the shootout, because the shootout was a lot of fun. Now, again, Jones did have a really good game. He made some really big saves in this one, which is a pretty nice bounce back performance. But you know, and the Sharks walk away with the point,
and the Sharks get a point, which
in second.
And that's the thing. Like, the Sharks are very lucky that over the last couple of weeks, the rest of the Pacific has been hot garbage along with them.
And they're also lucky that that point exists still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it should. Because it's stupid. Right? I mean, are you going to argue against that? Like, you know, the Sharks can lose a whole bunch of games and get points. That makes no sense.
Hey, everybody else gets the same rules. So if they can get those points, then the Sharks should be able to get
them. Yeah, my argument is that no one should be getting those points, though.
No, right. I hear you. Wow. But until you are the commissioner and get to abolish the loser point.
That'll be another 25 years at least.
So
yeah. Any last thoughts on this before we move on to the final game of this week, not counting the game that's just starting now, since we're doing this podcast on a Sunday instead of a Friday.
Oh, right. I get to see a game live.
That's insane.
I just continue to think the shootout is a terrible way to determine games. I'm just gonna say
I agree.
Yeah. I agree. Although this was a more entertaining one, but yes, I do agree. Yeah. Speaking of, it wasn't really more bad entertaining teams. Game. There's no transition. I'm sloppy in the mornings, guys. We got to go back to nights. I need some scotch and meat. The Sharks beat the Blue Jackets. Logan Couture, Kevin LeBanc. Hey, Kevin LeBanc again. And Vlasic, who seems to be on a revenge for not getting to play in the Olympics tour.
It was a reappearance of power good forward move. Mark-Edward Vlasic. Sorry.
Yes. Great move. Ben, come on. At some point, you've got to give the guy some offensive credit. I mean,
you're right. Let's move him to forward.
Okay. That's not what I'm saying here.
If Timo Meier had that backhand, he'd have 30 points or 30
you know
goals.
You know what's scary, Ben? This is the only team where you can say that and people might take you seriously.
Oh, God. Yeah. Let's trade.
Wait, I'm not
here.
Serious?
No.
Clearly. You're right.
No.
Please get out of here with that. Jones had another decent game here. He's slowly looking like he's back on form a bit, which is nice.
The one goal he gave up was it was as much on the deflection by DeMello as was on him being on the post.
You have to wonder how much of Jones, and this has obviously been the debate and going to continue to be the debate, and we'll probably never know, but how much of Jones's play this season has been because of injuries or undisclosed or not properly healed injuries, and how much is just straight he's just having a bad year. And it could be a combination of both, obviously.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's certainly one of those things where with the way that the Sharks organization is handling things certainly fuels plenty of fun Sharks debates, I think.
Yeah, we'll find out in July.
Right.
That's a good point. I don't really have much on this game, guys. I got to be honest with you. I watched it, but it was pretty forgettable for me, other than obviously getting the points, which again here was pretty necessary given the points they gave up against the Penguins and the extra points they couldn't secure against the Red Wings. I mean, obviously the Sharks clinging for life, I would say, in that second spot this week, especially with Jumbo gone. By the way, I want to bring something else up. Oh, go ahead, guys.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, for being kind of a, you know, not a slow game, but a low intensity game, I really liked how we scored in all the situations we were supposed to score in.
So it was interesting to me. The first period, it felt like the Sharks had the puck a lot more than Columbus did, because Columbus was constantly hitting guys. And yet, if you look at the possession chart, the Sharks didn't get a lot of shots out of the situations in which they had the puck. So it was kind of an uneventful first period until the power play goal, right? And then pretty uneventful after that. The second period, the Sharks really, to me, dominated and didn't have a lot to show for it because of that, you know, deflected goal from that Boone Jenner got. And then, of course, as you know, Colin already said, they get another power play towards the middle of the frame. And hey, look, another goal. And, you know, that's good because the power play has looked as good with Jumbo away as it did with him here, which they're really going to need it to probably to score. But at even strength, they struggled. I felt like the Sharks, you know, really struggled to get shots on net and even at even strength until you deployed Mark Edward Vlasic power forward. And
well, 3-1. We're a team that can be bullied. It's like when we lose play along the boards, we can't transition from the boards into the slot or, you know, back to the point. And we sort of lock up. So when teams bully us, we have a hard time dealing with that. And Jumbo, being the giant puck possession person he is, you know, was our key for dealing with that. And when he's gone, we suffer.
Yeah, I'm not convinced the bullying did anything except tire out Columbus. If you look at the second period, again, the Sharks kind of ran away with that period possession-wise after Columbus had spent so much time putting bodies on dudes. So
I think they overdid it.
I'm not necessarily sure. I mean, again, if you're piling up hits, it means you don't have the puck.
So. That doesn't believe in the physical side of the game, Colin.
No, I do. That's why I like Meyer. But there, you know, this is a pretty typical thing you see from, you know, Columbus's terrible coach is just go hit everything, hit everything. Yeah. That's how we win. And
body first play. No. But
it's not about. I mean, obviously, nobody wants to get hit in a hockey game, right? That shit piles up, and you're
except goalies,
no doubt, right?
Right.
But there's such a thing as going, you know, is overemphasizing that, and then people just skate by you. Right?
Well, the physical game, the physical game will wear you out, and that is the point of the physical game. If you're like aggressive on the forecheck, for example, is not only keeping that puck deep in that zone, but it's also to, like finishing checks in general wears out the other team. If you do it incorrectly,
it can. Wear you out as well. I think the part that often gets ignored in that is that the hitter also themselves, you know, they wear down. I mean, just look at the career of Tommy Wingles to see where that goes, right? Yeah. Guys who focus on hitting young, they break down too.
But also look at IQ comes into it a lot, because look at how often Wingles missed. So he would go just to play the body and just absolutely wreck himself on the boards. So
but that's fair.
Malkin, for instance, Malkin is brilliant about playing body versus playing skill.
Yeah. But Ryan Klo too, right? That guy,
he was pretty good about that. Yeah,
you know, broke down, you know, and he did take some hits and obviously had some concussions too. But that's the thing, right? There are situations where you absolutely want to, on the forecheck, as you say, Alex, you put physical pressure on guys and keep the puck in the zone. But the Columbus game early in the first period, it was more about, oh, the Sharks are trying to transition out of their own end. Well, we're going to take 50 steps and hit them.
Yeah, body.
After the puck is already gone, and then the Sharks, you got one guy behind the play now, while the Sharks are transitioning into the offensive zone, and that's not great.
No, definitely not. So great.
Is Alex going to talk about trade rumors now?
I wasn't going to bring up any in particular, just noting that obviously this is going to be a fun couple of weeks leading up into the deadline if you're into trade rumors, just because for obvious reasons. The Sharks being down a Jumbo, and in general, you know, looking to eventually replace Jumbo and still backfill for Marlowe, you know, there's a likelihood that, or at least there was before Jumbo went down, that they were going to try to be active to some degree. This is also a better year for free agents than last year by a pretty wide margin. So it's entirely possible that the Sharks hold on to all their chips and then become extremely aggressive in the offseason. I think whether or not that's the case comes down to a couple of things. It comes down to whether or not some of the rumored asking prices for some of the more marquee players drops, because right now, if you're following any of this stuff, they sound pretty, even from reliable sources, sound pretty ridiculous. Then again, you do try to start, you know, teams want to get what they want to get, and you negotiate yourselves to the middle. But also, you know, if the Sharks continue to slide, and that's why this week, you know, other than the fact that these games were not necessarily the most exciting games in the world, or the ones that you, as a Sharks fan, you were like, it's still pretty interesting, because if you're Doug Wilson, the big question is, can the Sharks hang on to a playoff spot until Jumbo comes back, assuming Jumbo does come back? And if not, he's going to feel a lot more pressure, obviously, to something,
make a bad trade.
Maybe look, let's be real,
we know what the reality of this fan base. There are a lot of us very passionate diehard Sharks fans, but let's not kid ourselves. This is not Toronto. So, you know, if the Sharks don't make the playoffs or have a bad season, we know already that attendance will drop, and that's not what the Sharks organization wants, because they last time that happened, they decided to build a giant shark tank inside the arena. Yeah, basically the whole emphasis on 365 is to try to keep, you know, fans getting back still, basically, even after that Stanley Cup season. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. The Sharks are rumored to be looking at a lot of people. And by the way, when I say rumored, and I think we had this conversation last year, you got to be real careful about who you're reading and what you're reading. There are certain situations where it's just the press, Montreal and Toronto, making things up or wild speculation that then blossoms into a rumor, but it's not based on any conversations. But then there are other things, like, for example, a player releasing their list of acceptable trade destinations and the Sharks being on it. Or, you know, if you're hearing something from Elliot Friedman, is usually a pretty decent source, or guys like LeBrun are pretty decent sources. You can also
Bob
check
McKenzie.
Out Hockey, which, yeah, Bob McKenzie as well. They're legit sources and not legit sources. If you listen to the legit sources right now, there are a handful of names that the Sharks have either had conversations about, are potentially targeting, if not now, maybe the offseason, because a lot of those are going to be free agents. Or in a lot of cases, I think it's just really obvious what players who are available the Sharks ought to be looking at if they're not, right? Like Tavares is going to pop up every single time, because that just kind of makes sense if the Sharks had any chance of landing him. So it's going to be fun for those of you who follow that stuff. My recommendation, don't follow Hockey Buzzer Eklund. No offense if you do. No offense to those guys if they listen to the podcast. Not exactly reliable. Just make sure you use your
hold
brain.
On. Hold on.
No Eklund offense. Can, just ignore
can
them.
Die in a fire. So definitely offense to that guy. He's Jeez, terrible.
So much for you calming down in your old age. I sincerely hope we do nothing. I hope we just do our best to see if this squad can make it to the second round of the playoffs and do something with it.
That's the thing. The Sharks are not really going to be able to acquire a piece that they, you know, a marquee piece, which is, I think, what we all agree are, if they don't resign Thornton, they're probably going to need something, not necessarily a franchise player. They're not going to be able to do that without giving a whole bunch up. So, you know, their best bet, if you like the current roster for the most part, you just think it needs a little work, if they can hold on to a playoff spot, their best bet will be to get to free agency. And they're going to have a ton of cap space, especially if the cap goes up, for free agency. So, you know, I think that's what I'm hoping for as well. I don't really feel like, unless the Sharks can swing someone for picks or maybe a prospect that isn't really, you know, notable for any reason, then sure, obviously, if you can make an addition, that would be great, as long as they're not super old. But otherwise, save those chips. You know, especially since the other option is to trade for a player who's about to be a UFA, so that you can kind of get a jump start on re-signing him. But then again, you're going to have to give up a lot of stuff to do that. So,
as the season has gone on, and we talked about the narrative, is that this team needs to replace Patrick Marleau.
As we've
seen, this year.
Right.
You know, you don't replace Jumbo. He's still on the roster. He's just hurt, right?
No. But we were trying to figure out whether or not the team would have enough of a core to survive post-Jumbo as well. So I think it's
for sure. But that, you know, what I think we see right now is the team has replaced Marleau scoring. It's just been distributed, right? We talked about that last week.
Yeah.
So that's why my argument is you don't really need to do too much at this deadline, because it turns out that a combination of Tierney and LeBanc and Meyer, who, by the way, just scored a goal.
Yeah.
Spoilers. functions for that. So you're right. What the real emphasis needs to be now is, what do they do next year?
Right.
Can they replace Jumbo?
Making that's a move for the sake of doing a playoff run this year would be a colossal mistake in my eyes.
Yeah, because we don't even know, you know, when Jumbo comes back, we don't even know what he's going to be.
Yeah.
Yep. He could be just still dead. And in that case, the Sharks are sparing a miracle. They're done. Right.
Yeah.
So that's right. You know, we need to emphasize whatever is going to be the Jumbo replacement next. And that's not coming from internal.
No, obviously not at this point.
Yeah. Not at, I mean, it barely exists. Number one pick, which
it barely exists in the league, let alone
right.
Well, if the Sharks had the number one pick, they would trade the pick, trade back.
So you heard it here first. You heard it here first. The Sharks are trading for McDavid.
Oh, snap. I would do that in 2 seconds. Who do you want?
Yeah, me too.
Who do you want? Who do you want? I'll go out and get the player you want if I don't have the player you want.
You want Tavares? We'll sign him and then trade him to you.
Done. Call it a day. Call it a day. Gents, the Sharks are still clinging to that second in the division position with 62 points. Vegas is kind of running away with it at this point with 72 up there in first. They're not out of range, but man, they continue to play pretty well, so it's going to be difficult.
Let's be honest.
Stranger things have happened. Again, the Sharks sitting there with 62 in second, but right behind them, nipping at their heels, are Los Angeles at 61, Calgary at 60, and Anaheim at 60. And then beyond that, it's just a dumpster fire in the Pacific. No offense to Edmonton or Vancouver. Definitely offense to Arizona. The Sharks this week. So as you seemingly have, if you've been paying attention, you know today is Sunday. The Sharks right now are playing the Carolina Hurricanes. Soon to maybe be the Carolina Whalers if they want to really piss off Hartford people. Tuesday, they take on the Colorado Avalanche. That ends their road trip, and they're back at home for a while. Thursday, they play the Vegas Golden Knights, so that game will obviously be interesting and maybe important. And then, again, kind of another important game, being that it's in division, even though it's not against one of the teams chasing them, they will be playing Edmonton. And that will be kind of a back-to-normal schedule. This will be the first week in a while that I can recall that we haven't had a back-to-back in it.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Ben?
Yeah, small favors.
I just said that Edmonton game is what we call a gimme.
Yeah, ought to be. But that's not how I think we all know that, Ben. Guys, your three stars of the week. Colin, why don't you go first this week?
Third star is going to go to Couture's dentist.
We didn't even mention that during Columbus's game, or during the Columbus game. Burns basically shot a puck like right now. he does it. Yeah. And you know what the best thing about that was? They made him do a post-game interview.
Yep, nothing fell out. So
what is wrong with you guys? Dude, his mouth is swollen, man. Don't make him do an interview.
So, you know, hope that guy really pulls through for the team.
Yeah.
Yeah. At least he came back into that game.
Yes, that was the second he got hit. I was well, we done. he reappeared, which is good.
Second star is gonna go to Meyer because he seems to be getting traction and he seems to be locking down his shot. So,
well, you want to talk about players that are stepping up and picking up the slack, especially in Joe's absence. That would be one. In fact, a bunch of guys are too. Yeah. I thought LeBanc did really well this week as well.
Yeah.
LeBanc has settled in the quarterback role where Jumbo would normally be on the power play and has been excellent there.
You know who I thought did okay in the Columbus game? Who DeBoer seems to not like Michael Bucker at all. No.
Oh, Daniel O'Regan?
Yeah.
Yeah, he finally is getting some time. It's true.
Yeah, and he had some nice shifts.
And my third star is going to go to Logan because, you know, he's carrying the team. He's leading the way.
Wow, Logan gets one star, one solid star, and a star via proxy from you. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I know Ben's going to give a star to LeBanc, so we're good.
Don't do it.
He probably does deserve it, but I think there's a lot of guys who actually deserve stars this week. So am I up?
Yes, you're up. Yep,
go for it.
All right, Mark Edward Vlasic, power forward.
I'll take LeBanc. We can.
Mark Edward Vlasic, power forward is the third star. Second star that
Vlasic did was amazing.
Yeah, it was. second star is Logan because he has continued to score exactly when the Sharks needed him to.
Yes.
And my first star actually is LeBanc. Because everything he brings. On the power play in Jumbo's absence.
God, I hate following you because you and I half the time pick the exact same three stars. I'm picking the same three stars for all the same reasons with a bonus star to Kutcher's dentist just because he does a bang-up job. He's got his work cut out for him, that guy.
He fixes the bang-up jobs.
Well,
Yeah, Couture's teeth weren't exactly the most spectacular thing to begin with, and they just keep getting better thanks to Burns. So,
wow.
You know, you can't really complain. I love you, Logan. Please don't beat me up. That concludes the podcast for this week. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or through Apple's podcast app. You just look up Circling the Cup. You can do the same thing on Android platforms. You guys know how to do that. You can listen to us on the web at circlingthecup.com. You can follow us on Twitter at Circling the Cup, and you can also follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup. I did that as smooth as I will ever do it. That I was really tired.
Yeah, you should record
that. Get our fourth star of the week.
I didn't enunciate through any of it, but it doesn't matter. One big slur.
Yeah. That
concludes the podcast, guys. Looking forward to the next couple of weeks. Say bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Don't trade anybody, Doug. Right now, everybody. Don't trade, Doug. Resist.
Bye.
Bye.
Resist, Doug.
Bye-bye.